It is Saturday, December 18th, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Al and Alex and I all do some geek news. In the second half, we invite your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now, of course, for Geek Speak. But today, we're not doing a theme song, mostly because of, I'll tell you in just a second. What else we got to say? It's Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers, and business tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the second half, we will invite you to call in. You're welcome to get ready to do so now. The phone numbers are 800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. I'm Lyle Troxell, and here with me is Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
And we also have Alex Leas, our Southern California correspondent. Hello, Alex.
Good morning, Lyle.
So how's the weather down there?
Raining.
Raining. All right, the reason I don't, it's kind of cloudy and muggy here. I guess it's all up and down the coast of California. Mm-hmm. So the reason I don't have a theme song today is because I've been migrating my computer. And I got one of those new hard drives we talked about from Seagate. What's it called?
It's the Mac.
I should know this.
The Mac. It's Seagate.
I know. It's like
two weeks
of Geek Speak episodes and we don't know what we're talking about. It's amazing. Yeah. Any case, it's this wonderful drive. And I decided not to do the migration assistant, which you normally do with OS X. It's really simple. You just kind of say, do it, transfer everything over. And I've been doing it kind of manually. And I do have the theme song on here, but I don't have the thing that I normally play it with, the applications. And the big reason for this is I didn't want to move all this stuff that I've been migrating for probably, 10 versions of OS X, something ridiculous like that. And I got to say, my machine is extremely fast, even though it's not as functional as it normally is. So this morning to get Alex on, I had to install Skype, and everything's working great. Everything's working great. I highly recommend it.
Seagate Momentus is the name of the drive.
Thank you very much.
Is that a hybrid drive?
That is.
That's the hybrid drive, yes.
And the thing is, my machine is working really, really fast, which we would expect with a hybrid drive, but I don't know if it's because I got rid of all the software that was on it and I've reinstalled everything, and that's partially why. Because I do things like run different databases and run different web servers, and things are happening in the background that I forgot that I set up. And in any case, nice and speedy. Highly recommend it, though Migration Assistant is a lot easier than doing it manually. You need to know what you're doing with moving library files around and such. Though when I did install Skype, all my settings were there, which was nice. Alex, I want to ask you, Al, what about you? What did you do this week that was kind of technical?
This week? My refrigerator ice maker broke. So
like the thing that spits it out the front.
It's when you come to the front of the refrigerator, you push your cup against this little lever. Probably the most inexpensive, cheapest, possible, crummiest.
And you can feel it, too, when you push it in.
You think, the second you push it, I could break this right now.
And you have kids. You'd think it'd be broken already.
And I have kids.
Is that what broke?
Yes, that thing broke. And it didn't break, but you could see it. But when the problem with it was when you pushed into with the cup, the ice started coming out, and it never snapped back, so it would just... It was just constant. It would, you can imagine.
The ice would hit the floor.
Just ice everywhere, and it just keeps coming. And then sometimes it would just gather up in, and you finally get it closed. And then you'd open up the freezer later on during the day, and all this ice would fly out because it was all just building up. So
the ice machine attacks.
And I just, the whole repairman.
That's really dangerous. Your whole family could have been frozen to death.
We could have all frozen.
Gone to sleep at night in the whole kitchen filled with ice.
It would have been in the summer. Wouldn't have been too bad. But
so you called somebody and had them come out?
No, I don't really like to have it's like to call a repairman to do all these kind of things isn't the kind of geeky thing that I think a lot of us, who especially listeners, how can I fix this? So I looked at it, and refrigerators are like they're like nuclear reactors now. So it's not like you open up, that's broken.
I think that might be what's wrong with your fridge, is that it's not supposed to be nuclear reactor.
Well, the thing is so complicated. So I thought, I'll look on the web. So I go on the web, and I type in the model name of my refrigerator. And this is something that all of you can do if you have a problem with something, an appliance, find the model number, and then type it into the web and say, Frigidaire model number, you know, A, B, C, whatever, and then say broken something, you know, and then you'll see all the stuff. And I came to this site called fixya.com, mm-hmm. F-I-X-Y-A.com. And at fixya.com, they have literally just all manner of broken things and showing you how to fix them. And in addition to that, if the thing that you have broken is something that other people haven't had broken, then you can contact them, and they have like a fee structure. There's like a small amount for, you know, we'll call you back in a day or two, or if you need help today, we'll call you back here, you know, or if you need instant help. I needed help soon, so it was under $10, okay? And I got, you know, I told them my problem, and literally in like an hour or two, somebody called me, you know, emailed me back and said, well, this is the refrigerator you have. And then I went back and said, well, it's not doing this. And he gave me links and showed me exactly how to fix the thing. And then even gave me a link to where I could go and buy the part to.
Oh, that's cool.
And
he'd already researched whether it was the right part.
Yeah, these, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you know, you always see these repairmen come and they fix and you go, wow, they're really smart. But, you know, it's always the same things that break, you know.
Yeah.
And so he knew everything and just sent me the stuff. And I went and bought the part. And this weekend, took the refrigerator thing apart. Turns out that wasn't the problem.
Oh, no.
But I got to say, the guy was very helpful. And this could very well have been the problem. And right. It doesn't turn me off of the service. And I still think it was worth it to do that because he gave me the diagram of the refrigerator. I saw
and
what
and
I
that was the
apart.
Correct diagram?
Yeah, it was a correct diagram. Everything
yeah,
was right.
Pretty useful.
And the thing that I bought, you know what? That thing's going to break anyway. I know that's going to break anyway, so I just kept it. And then it turned out when I opened it up and took it all apart that the little flap had slipped off the grooves inside there. You had to take the whole thing apart to find out. And but I kept the part because the other thing that he sent me is going to break. It's obvious. And, you know, so I thought, well, that's okay. But fixya.com, it's a way to get to do stuff yourself, you know, and
cool.
Not, you know, and I probably saved a lot of money on a repair.
Do stuff yourself with help.
With help, yeah. I mean, if you're sort of mechanically inclined or you just, you know, you can't know everything, but.
Well, I went ahead and add that to the GeekSpeak website. And of course, you can learn all the stuff we talk about, more about mm-hmm. it.
What did you do this weekend?
Oh, well, besides my machine fixing, that was this last week. So
oh,
this weekend,
right, yeah.
I've been performing. So last night I performed. Mm-hmm. This weekend we close Miracle, tomorrow matinee. Mm-hmm. Miracle on 34th Street, Macme Theater, Ben Lumend. And actually, currently I'm in costume because I figure I should be in costume
and
for radio.
He's wearing a tie. That's his costume.
That's what the tie is all about.
Yeah, look fantastic.
Yeah, and it's a great, I saw the show, you know, and I had a great time.
Oh, good.
So
I'm glad you did.
It's fantastic.
It's been a lot of fun to do.
It's weird seeing you act. It's like, you're an actor.
I am.
Miles,
a bit of
an actor.
A little bit.
How do I know that he's really
you
my
never
friend?
Know. In fact, you don't know if I'm actually doing the radio or if the personality is doing the radio.
Right.
It's true.
It's true. Yeah.
It's funny because I'm used to, of course, speaking to people. I do mm-hmm. Geek Speak for 10 years now, and every day, every Saturday, speak to 30,000 people. But mm-hmm. It's very different inside an audience when you see all these eyballs looking back at
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you're like walking within the audience. It's not
we do
like
a lot
the
of the staging.
Stage.
It's called in the center of the stage, in the center of the auditorium.
So you can actually you walk right by people who are you're within feet. Of
I'm
people.
Tripping over yes. people. It's a very intimate experience.
Yes.
It's actually kind of funny. Half of the geeks are or have been actors. Miles is an actor, or at least, true. You know, has been. I was back in high school and college.
Miles came to the show last night.
I act up a lot.
You do?
Yeah.
You're always acting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last night something technical kind of happened that was pretty interesting. We the lighting systems for theaters are now computers, basically. They're running mm-hmm. Windows normally with an application on top of that. The light board at Park Hall, I'm not sure what OS it's running, but if a power disruption happens that's really quick, just like one of those little flashes that all the lights kind of blink, mm-hmm. the board reboots.
Ooh.
And when the board reboots, it loses its cue settings where it is in the show and all the lights turn off.
Ouch.
So about seven times last night,
yeah.
the power went out like that. You were in Ben Lomond too,
I
right?
can tell you, that's Ben Lomond.
And the stage lights would go out. All the other incandescents and stuff around, exit lights and stuff, those all stayed on. The emergency lights didn't come on. And then there's two spotlight operators which are used for the choir and the singing and such. And they turned on pretty quickly. So we were constantly going between correct lighting and then recovery lighting, which is spotlights.
You don't have a UPS on that or something?
Well, that's the thing I was thinking about as soon as it happens. Like, you know, that would be solved by a nice UPS. Yeah. Which would
even a crummy UPS.
I know. Well, the board's nothing, too. It's got a monitor, but the monitor would go out, but the board itself
wouldn't. Of course, when the power goes out with a UPS, you get this...
That's true. I'd have to mute that. I'd be up in the booth. It'd be probably be better than...
Yeah, I mean, you also have the power that feeds into the lights themselves that has to stay going, too.
So if you want to see me, you've got one opportunity basically tonight at 8 o'clock in Ben Lomond. I think the door is open at 7:30, and you can learn about it. The show, if you'd like, mctshows.org, mctshows.org, which is Mount Community Theater. In any case, you can learn more about that by listening to a few weeks ago. We did a Talk of the Bay with Rick Filman, who interviewed me and Santa. It's a great production. A lot of fun.
Rick Filman?
Yes. Oh. Rick Kleffel. Sorry. Rick Filman's waiting for Rick phone Filman. Calls in the room.
He's our guy.
All right. Let's get on with some geek news. Alex, you didn't talk about what happened in the week, so why don't you cover the first news story?
All right. Well, I mean, earlier this week, I had gone out. As far as geeky stuff I had done was between Monday night and Tuesday morning, I sat out in the middle of nowhere photographing the Geminids. So I did a little bit of...
Remember with like long shutter times?
Yeah, well, not so long. I actually did it more for capturing the meteors and really didn't want the stars to be too bright. So I had to just do like 2 to 5 second exposures.
How many did you catch?
I put it on a timer, and so it just kept shooting every 5 seconds another shot. So I've got over 1,000 pictures from that night. I've only gone through a quarter of them.
So what were you using? What camera are you using?
The Canon T1i.
Mm-hmm. And were you connecting that up to a computer to trigger it?
No, actually, I just got a little remote off of Amazon that you just kind of plug into the manual trigger, and it basically has a built-in timer and just triggers the camera, holds it, keeps the shutter open.
So it's a hardware device that does it?
Yeah.
It doesn't have interval shooting or anything?
The external device does. Canon does. Most of Canon's, I don't think, has interval. I believe Nikon does.
Yeah, I have a Nikon. I have the interval on there usually.
Does Nikon have interval for the SLRs?
Yeah. Most of them.
I don't think the D70 does.
D70 should, I thought.
I don't think so. I have a D70 too,
But
that is a great solution. Just have a wired remote that does the time-lapse. Because lots of times the interval shooting doesn't have the right settings that you want. You want a certain speed. I like a good 5 second speed.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway,
cool. So did you get some good shots?
Yeah, actually I did. There was a lot of them you barely see them, but I've got one that's just a beautiful shot. I was shooting mostly at Orion.
Shoot me a JPEG of it so I can put it up on geekspeak.org?
Sure, yeah, I'll definitely send that to you.
See some of Alex's photography on our site.
So anyway, as far as kind of space-related news, we've got an upcoming celestial event. We're going to be having the lunar eclipse, a full lunar eclipse, coming up between Monday and Tuesday night of next week, so in just a couple days. And the thing is with this is that it's one of the few that we actually have that's fully visible to all of North America, because a lot of the time it ends up being over Asia or over Europe or something like that. We just maybe catch a little bit of it by the time we rotate around and we end up seeing the moon. So this time it's actually here. It should be lasting. I think it's like 72 minutes, something like that, 75 minutes for the full eclipse period.
What time?
It'll be, let's see, what was the times on that? I don't see the time specifically listed. I will check that, make sure we have that when we post up the article. The next time that this is expected to happen will be 2014. So it'll be a little while before we see this again on where we're at. Unfortunately, I have rain and clouds, and you mentioned you have muggy days, so we might not get to see this.
Oh, that's too bad. Mm. Well, thanks for that. Well, Al, how you doing, man?
Good.
Let's go ahead and talk about news of the week instead of what we did for ourselves. Let's talk about the outer geeky world. Go ahead.
I can tell you about something that just sort of changed my outlook on science fiction.
That sounds perfect.
Well, I was looking for some neat iPhone apps, and I ran across this application called WordLens. And what WordLens does is you install it. It's under $10. You install it, and then you point your phone at some sort of text.
The camera of your phone.
The camera of your phone. And so you're looking at the video of on your phone, and you point it at the text, and the text is instantly changed into Spanish.
Intriguing.
Okay. Do you realize what's happening?
Wait, wait. I mean, so on the display of your camera.
On the display of my camera, I have a sign.
The English. I have or is a, the Spanish.
Yeah, there's a sign that says home on it. So I point, or sentences or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I pointed at the sign that says home, and then it says casa. You know, it just actually uses the same kind of font, rearranges it.
No.
And then I'm looking at it in Spanish. And now I know this seems ridiculous and crazy. And, you know, just go ahead and try it on anything.
All right, right. Here I've got KOSP Legal ID. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. Oh, my gosh. This is awesome.
And, you know, the funny thing is that...
This is called World Lens?
It's called Word Lens.
Word
and,
Lens.
And, you know, the application is actually free. You download it. And then it gives you a couple free features. Like, it will just take
the
words.
Here's your phone. I'm going to get my phone.
Okay.
I'm going to get it then.
All
right, go on.
It'll take the words and re-jumble them. So it'll just say, as a demonstration, you type it, you point it at a sentence, and it just jumbles up all the words and all the letters. Okay. That's the free thing. And then the other thing is it'll just blank the words out. So it's just demonstrating how good it is. And so then an in-app purchase would be the Spanish to English or English to
Spanish.
Right,
the things that actually do something interesting or ungeeky, useful.
Once you've tried the free part,
the thing that's cool about this is you don't say, okay, take this picture now, process this image, and then do this. It's like real time, which is perfect for like if you're driving in a place that has signs that aren't in your native language.
Yeah.
You can use it real quick, or you're walking around another city.
Yeah, and
very cool.
And the reason this changed my outlook on science fiction, or effect.
Yeah, how's that have to do with science fiction?
The one thing that I'm always, you know, I love science fiction, I love Star Trek, all these things, and I'm willing to just go along with the warp drive and all this kind of stuff. Say, yeah, that's okay. I can deal with that, and you know that's good. The one thing that's always been a low level irritant to me is every time, you know, come across an alien or something, you land on another planet. Everybody speaks perfect English. or you're in the Enterprise and you know some monster comes on and then talks to you and says and threatens you in your own language and it's like, you know,
that doesn't make any sense.
I like this. It's good. I can't understand it if it's not in English.
You
but
you can travel. You can travel 600 miles on this planet in any direction basically and speak a different language.
Right.
Like, just, everyone's gonna speak.
You don't have to go into space. But in space, I mean, how could you possibly? I mean, it just always kind of bothered me. But then when I saw this. And this is in my phone. And I was able to just point it at something and it instantly rearranges the letters to be in the other language. I realized it's just a matter of processing power. And at this point, you know, if we have it in our phones, you know, this happens to be an iPhone, but I'm sure it's question time for there's an Android app like this too. If we have this kind of power in our phones, and you know, a couple hundred years in the future, we'll probably have some sort of embedded thing that could change things fast enough so that we'd be able to translate on the fly no matter what people are saying. And it made it okay. It made my watching science fiction now, that one low-level irritant that always was pervasive everywhere, it's gone now because I've seen this thing. I've it's proven
so
enough to me to say.
In it with high enough technology, mm-hmm. it would magically, everyone would speak the same language. You wouldn't even know.
It isn't even that far-fetched because we're almost there. And
it's true that, you know, there's this great idea that high enough technology is like magic. And this feels like that mm-hmm. idea that automatically it's going to process the visual world. And doing that orally would be pretty easily. I mean, it's the same type of thing, just a lot of processing power. You can do it when you have noise cancellation now. So you'd have selective noise cancellation, cancel out this weird this alien language,
mm-hmm, right.
and translate it into whatever language you want.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even that far-fetched to imagine right now. And so it totally, like, everything, we're living in a great time, you know, I think.
I agree.
Of course, unless the aliens speak in metaphors, and then, you know, we're screwed.
There was a whole episode about that, actually, of Star Trek.
There were two, actually.
Yeah.
The original and then a repeat of the same idea.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea. Which basically you have to know all the stories to understand the language.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense, because if you speak in metaphor, how can you tell a story but without metaphor?
Wasn't that Next Generation?
So, well, the one I'm thinking of is, but I guess it was an original, too.
Yeah.
The thing that doesn't make it never made any sense, though, is if you have an entire dialogue around metaphor, mm-hmm. how do you originally tell the story? The first story.
Yeah, how did it start out?
Right.
The chicken or the egg kind of,
right.
You can't have a metaphor.
So there's
got
to be some baseline language. It doesn't necessarily have to have verbs or anything. It could mm-hmm. it could be like a something else.
Well,
I guess you could do it with
evolved.
Just...
Well, there still are verbs and such. You just have to describe a story that people understand the meaning to.
Right. And that's
so
true.
People have to be alive at the time, and then it has to be built up as having context for society as a whole.
What I'm saying, though, is if you have a child in that society, they're going to have to hear the story at some point the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get the idea that you're going to learn language a totally different way as a child when you learn language. You just kind of soak it in and start picking it up. But mm-hmm. if you only base things on metaphor, I mean, the reason this idea comes up, of course, is if you speak another language and you hear someone speak it and they say something crazy, doesn't make any sense at all, you realize, oh, that's not really that's not really a word. It's a phrase that means something else. We have a lot of them in English, of course, and they're impossible to think of unless you have the example in front of you. But let's go on, shall we, with other news stories. I believe it's Mr. Sleese's turn. And Alex, sure. I would love to know about the nuclear program in Iran.
Yeah, well, it's not quite like the nuclear program in Al's refrigerator.
Thank God.
But, but we have, Iran was set back. We've got a virus that went around, and it's actually one of the nastier viruses out in the internet, called Stuxnet. And it happened to get into Iran's nuclear program, into their computers, likely brought in through contractors' laptops that they, take from the outside and bring into the inside. And then when they're working, it infects machines. Well, it infected so many systems on their network that they're pretty much looking at having to just get rid of everything.
Is it that evasive?
Yeah, evasive, it is. Invasive.
Invasive.
Yes.
And evasive. You can't get rid of it if it's evasive.
Well, it is evasive in a way. It's just that it can be really hard to get off a system. It's kind of like rootkits. They're really a pain. You have to do a full reinstall, which essentially means wiping your whole system. But also, Iran's not hasn't really been known for having a strong sense for computer security. It's just not something that they've really been dealing with as much. And so they're discovering how serious internet and computer viruses are. One of the rumors going around is that this was at least speculation is that this virus is actually created by Israeli forces, their intelligence agency. So that wouldn't be too far fetched, I don't think. But it's interesting because it's using viruses as a mechanism of war. But at the same time, if war is going to happen, it's kind of cool because nobody died.
Right. Get that. In the sense that there's no casualties if it was war. But this virus is not engineered specifically to take out other systems. I mean, it's just a general virus, right?
It's pretty nasty. It does take out the system. Damaging, corrupting files. It makes a system unusable.
But it does that after a period of time of being on the machine so it can spread?
Pretty much. It spreads, it gets into your systems, it then can be used to do whatever it wants. It can download additional mechanisms for other problems, for spying, all sorts of things. It's basically a big problem from both the secret standpoint, malware in general. If malware can get into your systems and stay in your systems for a long period of time, or stay in your network as a whole, not just one system, but your network. You have some computer in Joe Schmo's office under the desk. That one computer, if it's hooked up to the network, could infect all the other computers again. If you go and clean them all, you literally have to clear the network and rebuild a whole new network. Because if one system still on that network is there and can reinfect, you're done.
Thank you, Alex. In just a second, Al's going to give us the geek bit for today. I want to let you know that you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room, we have Al Luckow, and also Alex Sleas is joining us via Skype from Southern California. And in the other room, waiting to take your calls with questions and comments about technology, is Rick Fillman. Rick always answers the phone for us for years now, and it's a wonderful experience being on air. We do our best to help you out, and sometimes we do. The phone numbers are 1-800-655-5877. For years I said the phone numbers, and I gave two numbers, and now I just give one phone number, but I still say the phone numbers are. There are multiple numbers in a number, right? So that's valid?
Those are the phone numbers.
The phone numbers are 1-800-655-5877. You can call us today with anything you'd like. Questions about technology is what we do best, but of course you can ask us about fruit if you'd like. We just don't know a lot about Persian apples.
Well, time flies like an arrow.
That's true.
And fruit flies like a banana.
Hey, metaphor. That's good. Thank you. Actually, that's simile. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone number is, again, 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. Al, what's the geek bit of today?
Okay, now this seems a little odd, but I'm going to talk about it because I keep going back to this. So a lot of guys out there, women, programmers, okay? So we always need data sets and just stuff to, manipulate, what do you need? Well, there's a couple of sites that actually I've linked to. They're fake name generators. So you end up in, I end up in a lot of situations where I just need a list of names. Okay. And I want names. I don't want John Smith. You know, I want random names with weird spellings and two names and different lengths and all this kind of stuff. And this site you can go to, you just press the button and it just generates a new name, and you just keep pressing it and pressing it, and then and then there's a whole list on the left, and you just copy that
Naomi
list.
Naomi Rebels, Timmy Hurst, Charity McIntosh, Petra Berry, Molly Moss, Vern Caldwell, Andrea Burt Ramirez, Antonio Wagner.
See how That's easy that is?
Fantastic.
I mean, it's amazing.
And every time you push it, you get a new name.
Yeah,
they're great.
And then just copy them and paste them. And it's a geek bit.
Well, you've done two news stories. Okay, this one says your randomly generated identity. Ooh. Oh, way cool.
Yeah. One of them lets you choose an ethnicity of name. There's a couple links. And again, all these links are up on geekspeak.org after the show. So you can go in and see all these things right about the word lands.
So this one's cool because you pick your gender and it can be random. And then you do your name set, like if it's going to be an American name, if you will.
Right. Right.
Depending on language, I guess. And then country is kind of where the address is going to be because it produces an artificial address and email address and everything.
And so that's
even mother's maiden name, even birthday, visa, credit card number, expiration date. So this is an ability to create really quickly a whole bunch of fake identities, which is not useful all the time, but very useful when you're programming.
Well, it's the lorem ipsum of name generators.
Please,
you know,
tell us what lorem ipsum is.
Well, lorem ipsum is something that us designers use. It's just Greek text. So a lot of times you're designing pages, and you can't design a page because whenever you have a context, you want to have text in the page so that you know what it looks like with text in it, because that's how people are going to see it. But you don't have the story written, so you just throw in dummy text, which is Greek, and the first two words of this traditional dummy text is lorem ipsum.
Is it Greek?
I don't know what it is, actually. I always thought it was Greek, but I don't know.
Let's say, contrary to popular belief, lorem ipsum is not simply random text. It has roots in a piece of classical Latin literature from 45 BC, making it over 2,000 years old. Richard McClinic, a Latin professor at Hampden Sydney College in Virginia, looked up one of the more obscure Latin words, consecutor, from a lorem ipsum passage, and going through the sites of the word in classical literature, discovered the undoubtable source. Lorem ipsum comes from sections of De Fibus Bonomorum et Malorum, the extremes of good and evil.
So let's just say it's old text.
That's really cool. So, but this text, the thing that's useful about it is it looks like English text.
And you don't get caught up reading it.
Right. You can never read it because it's not.
It's impossible.
It's totally,
even if you kind of know Latin or Greek, you're never going to be able to read it. So, but it looks like text. And that's
so when you do a design on a website, you put it in there and you fill everything with this stuff.
Yeah.
And then you know that that's what the design's going to look like. That's the font, the coloring, all that stuff. But you won't get tied up in what the actual text was. You won't be the designer sitting here writing something just to fill copy.
It's like the biggest mistake you can make is to design something and not think of the content that's going in there. Designing a shell, that's a beautiful shell. But then as soon as you stick the text, it's like designing a letterhead. Well, the letterhead looks nice, but I would never show somebody a letterhead design without putting text in it, because that's how you're going to see it, or anybody's going to see it. If it doesn't look right with text in it, then you made a mistake. And so this site, fake name generator, just get all these fake names, we're saying fake identities, but these are useless identities.
Right, it's not like you're going to falsify something with these things.
You can't. They're total nonsense, but they're the right length of word, you know, and the right fields. So you can easily just generate a whole bunch of junk and just manipulate it as a programmer.
Right.
You know.
I'm putting up the lorem ipsum site. It's a great one. It's called lipsum.com, and it has a whole history about it and all the text and all that. So if you want to read more about that, you can go to geekspeak.org.
That's a new one on me. See that. That's a good one. Yeah.
All right, Alex, I believe it's your turn. And let's see, we've got phone calls. No. Oh, we might have one. But Alex, why don't you go ahead and do a news story while we're setting that up?
All right. Well, kind of along the lines of security, let's take a little bit more of a positive spin here. There's a great article that Lifehacker kind of put together. It's actually a summary of many other articles that they had written over time, which is basically ways to help make yourself more secure, your computer more secure, your identity more secure. Generally protecting your information and how to do it.
That's on Lifehacker?
On Lifehacker.
In that group that got hacked?
Technically it is, isn't it?
Wait, what's the hacking story?
That's
well, this isn't really a story, a hacking story, as much as it is a good article on just ways to lower your risk for being hacked or having information stolen. So we'll have this up. There's a bunch of links to several articles that have been written over time that help reduce security. But also keep in mind, just because they got hacked doesn't mean that, reduce your risk.
Security vulnerabilities.
Yes. So this is, even though they may have been hacked, the guidance that they give is still an improvement over not doing anything or what you may have, maybe kind of doing now.
Matt from Monterey called in and asked again for the name of that translation on the fly app. It's called Word Lens.
Yeah.
It's an iPhone app. I bet they've got multiple versions of different apps. I bet there's an Android one too.
You know what? I saw, if you look at the link on our site, which we should have,
geekspeak.org,
you'll see a video of the thing working.
Oh, cool.
And then in the comments, it's a YouTube video and somebody shows it. It's amazing. In the comments, somebody says, oh, I only wish this was on Android too. So that makes me think that it's not there yet, but
we don't know exactly.
Like an obvious
thing. Well, Alex, our first question of the day from Rich from SoCal seems like it's going to be right in your bailiwack. Bailiwack? Bailiwack. There you go.
Hopefully I'll be able to answer it.
I hope bailiwack's metaphoric as well. Well, in any case, Rich, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I had a comment about the Stuxnet virus. It's absolutely astonishing. I really recommend that geeks go to the Symantec site and look at their big report on it. And I think it would be a great show if you could get somebody to come report on it, because it's absolutely astonishing what it does. I mean, it's really this one, which I granted it could be adapted, I'm afraid, but this one is really tightly targeted toward the Iranian centrifuge machines, and it leaps across space by it gets into the systems that have the programming for the chips that gives the controls to the centrifuges. So it hacks a new code into the centrifuge chip, and then they carry that, put it in the centrifuge, and now the malware is on the centrifuges, making them run incorrectly, so they're not correctly separating the uranium.
Hmm. So it's damaging the hardware or the firmware in there, basically.
It's hacked the firmware.
Yep.
It doesn't damage the hardware. It makes it run too fast and then too slow, and then too fast and too slow, so it doesn't give a sign that it's failed. It just doesn't separate the uranium.
Now, okay, is this Alex, are you aware of this level of complexity to the
system? I haven't dug into it in degree. I knew it was actually like, attacking the firmware, though.
You know, Rich, it sounds like this could be engineered specifically for the Iranian
It is incredible. You got to read about it.
But this virus also is everywhere in the wild, too, right?
Right, but I think that the specific ones that they've got are meant to deliver this specific package, but I got to believe it could be adapted. That's the scary part.
So if you have a centrifuge at home and you're listening,
it has to be running the Siemens Step 7 chip programming software.
That's amazing.
Unplug your refrigerators from the internet.
You know, this kind of story, what I hope is that by the time it becomes public knowledge, like who developed this and how it was developed, I want to read that book so bad.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's 50 years from now, but still, I'd love to know, like, who's the group of people doing this? Is this like a cadre of people that were working at Microsoft that were hired by the federal government? Like, who sponsored it? How is it done? It's fascinating stuff. I love the idea that the best way to target enemy system is to produce a virus that just does it by itself.
No bombs, no people killed directly, but the centrifuges don't work.
All you've got to do is infect the entire planet's net infrastructure, and you're set. Thank you so much for the call, Rich.
Sure.
I'll look up the story. We'll get up on the GeekSpeak site. Thank you so much.
Great.
All right. We do have other calls with questions and comments about technology, so I think we'll just go ahead and start stepping through them to some degree. From Coralitas, Diana, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I was calling because my husband and I moved back here from Europe, and we brought back a number of DVDs and tapes that are zoned for Europe. And we were wondering if you could give us some advice on how we could use those here, if there's an application where we can de-zone the...
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. DVDs have, I think, six different regions, and this is actually a different kind of encryption, if you will. I think it's encryption. It might not even be encryption. It might just be allowability to play. And basically on each, I think it's encryption, actually. On each piece of hardware, a DVD player, there's actually it's manufactured to run in a certain region. And if you've ever run DVDs on your computer, the first time you run that application, it says, what region do you live in, most likely? And you have to select it. And you can do that like three times. You can change your region on your DVD software on your computer like three times. But it's actually a hardware modification to the drive. And the regions are, I think the United States is region one. How clever of us. I think Europe is region two. And it steps through different areas. They're not continent-based. They're regions-based. And I think Australia's got its own. Yeah. If you've got a DVD of one region and you bring it to your another region's player, they just can't play. You can't play the DVD. It's a really annoying thing. The reason for it, the movie industry did this, is so they could release films at different times in different areas. So they can release a new film in the United States because it's been playing for long enough, but the film just opened in the box offices in Europe, and so they don't want to hit the DVD available there, so that they have to you have to see the movie in the movie theater. That's the basic idea behind it. Now, how do we get around it? Alex, Al, do you have solutions?
Well, you either have to have your hardware from that area, because the hardware, if you have your hardware and you have your appropriate electrical converter so
right,
that it
right.
plays on, and you know, you I can mean, certainly plug that in and play right. it from there.
And if you, of course, if you get a DVD player from England, for example, are you from England?
No, actually, most of these are from France.
Some France. And I think France is the same thing. You're using PAL for the video format, mm-hmm. not NTSC. That's a problem. And then on top of that, the DVD conversion. So, and then, of course, the power issue. That's a slight problem, not a big deal. So the question. So that's one solution. Now, let's go ahead and get the DVD player from that location. Mm-hmm. Now, the next problem, then your TV is not going to understand PAL necessarily. That could be a problem. But the another solution is to get what's called a region-free DVD player. And, Alex, do you have one of these?
No, I don't. Actually, the way I kind of go, I mean, I haven't dealt with multiple regions. I'm not sure if this will work, but I actually just rip all of my DVDs to my to a storage array, and that way I can just play them using an entertainment computer system, and I don't have the DVDs actually working.
Yeah, that is one solution, is if you've got a computer, you can go ahead and rip the DVD from your computer. Your computer region setting can be flexible to some degree. It can be a software. I think it's, I mean, when it was first happening, I believe there was actually a hardware bit that was being modified on the DVD player in your computer. But it might be that's completely software, and I'm not exactly sure of that. I would try playing your DVDs in your computer. Have you done that?
I tried. When I tried to put in a, like, for example, a French DVD, it asked that I bought in France, mm-hmm. and asked me to change the region. And I didn't want to do that.
Right, you didn't want to change the region too many times.
I would forget where I was.
Yeah. Well, you should be able to change the region on your computers a few times. And so one way to do that is, I mean, first off, we need to find out if the... Hey, Alex, can you look up to see if the region settings on software is just a software solution? Because what you could do is get two DVD software packages on your computer. One you use to play region...
Most of the DVD stuff, I believe, is actually set by the OS itself. I think the support for the decryption is built into the OS when you're doing a player.
That's too bad. That means that all the systems on that machine. So you could do something fun like get a live CD of Ubuntu. Ubuntu is an operating system that's a Linux operating system. You download and create a live CD, which is a CD that you can boot your computer from. But of course, then you'll have to have two optical drives, so that won't work.
Basically, there's no easy answer to this. And there's eight, I think there's nine different regions, and one of the regions is zero, which is all regions. And the only way you can really do it is you'd have to rip them into your computer. Or have the device from that country. They've kind of figured this one out.
Yeah.
Okay. I could always buy like five different computers and just zone them each one.
Or just get a DVD. How much does a DVD player cost in France? Are you saying $50 or something?
When I was in France, we were able to buy a DVD player, and certain ones were
region free.
Available, yes, region free.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought maybe that there would be an option here, but maybe there is.
You know, so. I have a feeling we're going to get a call or an email from a very knowledgeable geek in this area that will tell you exactly what to do. So stay tuned to GeekSpeak. You can go up to our site. We'll add it to the show notes. When it comes in. And geeks out there that have the solution to this problem, please let us know. You can give us a call right now if you'd like. If you're listening live, 1-800-655-5877. Anytime you'd like, you're welcome to send us email by going to geekspeak.org, fill out a little contact form. We'll get that and populate it to the masses.
And then I'll also put up the, after the show, put up the WikiLeak, Wikipedia has a good article just kind of summarizing what this is about and actually talks quite a bit about the Region Zero.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling. I went and found the semantic article on the Stuxnet virus, and I've published that on our website as well. Shall we take another news story quickly? Because we are running out of time, and I do want to get to the good one. So if one of you have got one that you really want to cover, Al, it's actually your turn, I believe.
Well, I have a really good one.
Yeah, please do.
All right. Well, there's the Maverick flying car.
Flying car?
Yes, it's a flying car.
Now let's not talk about that. I'm just kidding.
Who would want to hear about that?
Go on.
Well, the thing about the Maverick flying car is most of the time when you hear about flying cars, which of course are,
anytime you listen to Geek Speak.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whenever you hear about flying cars, we drive it there and then, we can fly it. But the thing about this flying car is it really is a car. And to prove it, they drove this car from Florida to Wisconsin to fly it. So they drove it from Florida on regular roads all the way, get to Wisconsin, and then they flew it in Wisconsin. And it's similar to sort of like an ultralight. The guy behind it, his name is Steve Saint, and the what they want to do with this car is they're trying to sort of prove its viability for being in remote areas, like areas where you don't have healthcare. You can't get to a hospital or anything like that. That's sort of their idea in how they want to, market this thing. But it's basically sort of like, it looks like a VW kind of with a propeller on the back. And cool. And then it's got this like portable telescopic mask that sort of flies out and it pulls up this parachute-like device.
I want to see a video of this. Is there any videos?
Yeah, the link that you can go and see this thing. And it's worth looking at. The thing pulls the thing out. And pops up it's like a parachute kind of thing, and mm-hmm. then it just you can drive it, and the thing's got one engine, two drive systems. When it's driving on the road, it can go 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds. In the air, it's a little bit slower. It's about 40 miles per hour in the air. It can get to about 90-95 miles per hour on land, and it gets at 25 to 30 miles per gallon. So it's kind of neat. It needs about 100 yards to take off.
Mm-hmm.
And
does all the things that necessary to make it fly, you can drive on a road with it?
Yep. Yeah. As a matter of fact, because it's a parachute kind of thing mm-hmm. on the top, it just tucks right into the roof. So it just kind of sucks in the roof, and then you zipper it closed, and you don't even know. I mean, the car, it looks a little bit like a VW with a propeller on the back.
Okay, that's fantastic. Yeah. And the propeller doesn't go away. It's always on the back?
It's always there, and you can drive it on like ice and or have pontoons or because it does propel it.
Flying with parasail is such a cool way of going. It's not very fast, of course. You're going.
Didn't the guy, GeekSpeak guy, have one of those things?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. One of our geeks has one of those.
Yeah.
And flies it regularly. I think it's called a paraglider. I'm not sure, but it's basically a parachute on the back and mm-hmm. lifts you up, and yeah, it's pretty cool.
But a flying car, There you go. You can watch the video on geekspeak.org.
Thank you so much, GeekSpeak.org, guys. All our information from Santa Cruz. Jerry, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Jerry. There,
I'm here.
Hi. What's your question today?
So the question is, my computer is very nice. It remembers my usernames and it remembers my logins. But what if I wanted to delete some of them? Like I've misspelled my email address several times, and it gives me lots and lots of choices. And can I erase those in any way?
Oh, I see. It saves all your settings and forms, form validation. You're on Firefox on a Mac?
Yes.
Yeah, you can easily do it. In fact, you can do it through Firefox. If you go to security, there's actually ways of erasing that data. You'll actually be able to see all the data you've entered in. And okay. I think Firefox by default, at least it used to, and of course I don't have it installed right now because I just reinstalled my OS, it actually saves your password and you can actually look at your passwords in Firefox, which I don't think is very good. There's plugins to disable it to encrypt them.
Isn't it in preferences?
Yeah, it's all in preferences.
Yeah, usually you just go to preferences, and then you can see the listing of all that stuff.
Alex, are you on Firefox right now?
Yeah, well, I am. Is this an issue with passwords or where it's actually doing the suggest for forms, like your address and stuff like that?
I don't mind the ones for the forms. No, it's the other ones, the passwords and all that.
Okay, the passwords you can easily manage. I'm not sure where the form stuff is, but the passwords, you go into your preferences, click on the security tab, and then you'll see saved passwords. You can click on that, and then you can go in and actually either view your passwords if you need to, or you can go and delete ones that it knows about already.
That's fantastic, Alex. Thank you so much for helping us out.
And the eclipse is at 10:30.
10:30 on Pacific 10:30. Time. Excellent. Jerry, thank you so much. I hope it's clear. Is that that's tonight or tomorrow night?
That's Monday night.
Monday night. Okay, Monday night, 10:30. Yeah. If it's clear, get outside and look at the moon. Thank you, Jerry, for the call.
Sure.
We also have a call to answer our whole question about Region Free stuff from Coralitas again. Carly, welcome to Geek Speak. Is it? What's your name? Oh, we've lost them.
Oh, man.
Man, we almost knew about the Region Free, and then it was lost.
That's not fair.
Call back. Let us
That's
know.
Not
see,
fair.
We have geeks out there just waiting to know.
Can you hit undo and see?
Let's see. No. Let's try it again.
One more time.
Alex, your turn with the news story. We are taking calls with questions and comments to technology. Phone numbers are 800-655-5877. Alex.
All right. So Google has decided to take a little step in helping keep people secure. One of the biggest problems is that a lot of vulnerabilities or exploits are compromising websites or even generating websites. I think I did a story about it where the attackers will end up using techniques to try and get their own sites bumped up on the search listings for popular topics.
Right.
And end up infecting systems that just click on the link when they do a Google search and their system gets infected. Well, Google has actually taken an extra step now. They kind of, I guess, monitor or, you know, somehow just scanning or watching for issues that may exist with certain websites. And instead of blocking the link or just delisting it, what it does do is put a little warning to the user saying this site may be compromised, which is really nice because it at least gives people a little bit of information before they go and click on that link. So that's going to be a really nice little security enhancement that will help.
That's a Google thing?
Yeah, it's in Google's search engine. So yeah. when you search for something on Google and it comes up with all those links, it now can give you a warning if the site is suspected of being a risk to you if you click on the link.
You know, I just went through that last week of a person that I did a site for a bunch of years ago, and she emailed me frantic saying, "Hey, my site, I can't. Every time I go there, I get this big warning message." And I'm like, "Whoa, what was your name again?" And then I remember I had handed the site over to somebody else because, you know, it was just sort of I put it together for her, and then she had somebody else do it. And I said, "Well, let me look." And I couldn't get into the site at all. I wouldn't let me in Firefox. It wouldn't let me in Safari. A couple of OSs did let it in. And then I ended up getting into the FTP and seeing all this. Somebody had like loaded it with all sorts of like redirects and all sorts of junk. And I couldn't believe the mess it was in. And in order to get it off that list, I had to go to Google and go to WebTools and then submit the URL again and ask for a review after I'd cleaned the whole thing up. And it was a it was last week. It was a just complete disaster. I mean, I couldn't believe somebody got in and did this. I mean, it was like a gigabyte of stuff.
Yeah, well, it's good to know. I mean, a lot of websites do get hacked. I know I had dealt with a lot of that and over time, so it's tough to keep them at bay.
It's the biggest reason why when students in the program that I manage at UCSC ask me for, you know, can I put up a WordPress site or something? I go, well, will you admin it for a long time, make sure it's secure? Because the problem is if you don't update the patches, it becomes vulnerable, and then it's really easy for a hacker to do. In fact, it's just an automated process. You crawl through, you find one, you add all your content to it, increase this your website traffic, and you're done. But so it's a difficult problem, definitely. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I'm so glad from Coralitas. Kalai called back. So what's the solution to this region-free DVD?
We have a lot of DVDs from Holland, which is also region 2, and we bought our DVD player at Sears, and if you go online and Google the model number of your DVD player, oftentimes there's a code that you can type in with the DVD controller that will allow you to switch regions. So our particular model happens to be with the DVD tray open, you push 9999, and then you can set your region.
Oh, no.
And you put the DVD player in, and it'll play that region. And when you want to switch regions, you just open the tray again and switch the regions.
So it's just a few sets on the remote control. Nothing you can tell your mom how to do.
A lot of the DVD players, this is a Philips player that we have, but I know if you Google your model number and, you know, region hack or something, I don't know.
Right.
Along those lines, you can sometimes pull up a code that'll allow you to switch the DVD player region. Wow.
Kalai, thank you so much. It's awesome.
We got an email from Michael also that was talking about something similar about his Zenith DVD. So it sounds like that's the same kind of thing he's doing.
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, why produce hardware that's completely locked down like that? I think it's fantastic, though, that, of course, the idea behind this is that the movie industry was going to restrict people on what they could play. Mm-hmm. And of course, the producers of DVD players were like, that's not fair. I want to be able to sell a product that works for anybody. And why would I want to have it such that I've got to make a different version for different areas? So, Kalai, thank you so much for calling and letting us know.
Good luck.
Thanks. All right. Well, we don't have any calls right now, which is always fascinating to me. We're going to have a crazy USB of the week at the end of the show. So, Alex, you got a news story for us?
Sure. Let's see. What do we have next here? Well, let's take a little break from security. Let's talk about bionic legs.
I asked Alex for a story.
Yeah, let's get that
Al.
Sound going.
Go ahead. Bionic legs.
Hey, it's not robots. It's bionic legs.
That's true. That's true.
We're talking bionics. Cyborgs. Yeah. It's different.
Cybernetic is totally different. That's true.
Tibian is a company that's been working on a bionic leg that they're actually using to try and help stroke victims who have lost a lot of their mobility. In general, what has been known is that stroke victims that do lose a lot of mobility, they go through rehab and they work on it for usually, I think it's like 12 months or so. But once you get to that point, their body stops regaining any more mobility. They're pretty much stuck after that point. Well, the use of this bionic leg and kind of going through rehab sessions using it, even well after the accident or not the accident, but the incident of their stroke, they still are able to actually improve. They have better balance. They can walk faster. So there's a lot of great improvements going on using this leg to basically kind of train the brain to how to reuse those controls of the muscles and kind of regain that control.
So I guess what you're saying is that the bionic leg is really more like a prosthetic that goes around an existing leg?
Exactly. It's kind of like...
it's an exoskeleton.
Yeah, exactly. It is an exoskeleton.
And so
exactly.
With doing this, even if you don't have the strength necessary to walk, you're able to have this thing on you that allows you then to move like you're walking. And of course, you are walking and your muscles get that memory reflex back.
And it's your brain learns how to control those muscles. It essentially kind of rewires itself to,
there's been a physical therapy training mechanism where you put people in water. So you reduce their weight and let them walk through water that's, belly button height. And that way your weight's a lot more reduced, but you can still do the movement so you can practice. So this is very much like that. Of course, you don't have to be wet. And of course, it's not for everybody to get in water for training. But that's fantastic. So exoskeleton leg
based
training.
In Sunnyvale. So it's kind of neat to have a somewhat
them,
local
don't you
one.
Think?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Fantastic. Go visit them and take a look at the cyber legs. Al Luckow is just about to do Crazy USB Week, but first I want to mention that GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. We thank the Puppet Master for its use. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by the Palo Alto Medical Foundation of Santa Cruz, now accepting new primary care patients, including Medicare and Medicare Advantage. More information at 477-2228. Al?
Well, Crazy USB is back. I thought since it's the holiday season, I would do the Crazy USB Xmas lights. These are basically lights that you plug into your USB. And you know, when you think about it, if you're in a cubicle environment and you want to put some festive kind of lights up, I could see doing this.
Yes, this is not the craziest one you've done.
It's not the craziest idea, but it's a weird idea. The weird thing about it is, it's Christmassy. It has the traditional Christmas dragonfly and the traditional dolphin and the traditional square cube light. So all these festive kind of things are in there. It's luminescent, 12 times...
And you can learn about it at geekspeak.org. Thank you so much. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. I want to thank Al, Alex, and we'll be here next week at the same time. Thanks for listening.